Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that there are over 5 million trees in New York City? That's not what you think of first when you think of New York City. 5 million trees. And maybe you've heard about or have seen the ads in the subway about the mayor's Million Tree Initiative now, aiming to plant a million new trees in New York City by the year 2030. The argument for this huge public investment is that trees can curb pollution, cool the city on hot summer days, and absorb some of the carbon emissions that have such negative effects on our global climate. But while the city is investing in new public trees on our streets and in our parks, who's paying attention to the private trees in our front yards and backyards? Don't private trees accomplish the same benefits that public trees do? Well, here to talk about the city's private trees, we have Evan Mason, Special Projects Coordinator of Landmark West, and Dr. Bill Solecki, Director of the Institute for Sustainable Cities and Professor of Geography at Hunter College, who are doing a study about backyard trees. Evan Mason in our studio. Hello.
Nice to meet you.
And Dr. Solecki on the phone. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us on.
So, Evan, tell me about the study that you're doing and why you're doing it.
Okay. First, I don't want to forget to mention Stuart Gaffin, who is at Columbia Institute for Climate Systems Research, and he is a partner in this project. He couldn't be here today. But the study got started because we looked in the backyards of row houses. Landmark West is a historic preservation advocacy organization that's based on the Upper West Side. And we thought, gee, you know, how many trees are there in the backyards of row houses, mostly 19th century row houses, and how much permeable surfaces are there in these backyards? And then we thought, well, how many other neighborhoods are characterized by the similar building topography in Sunset Park, Bed-Stuy? It's not only the Upper West Side, Harlem, there are many other areas. So we thought it would be good to quantify or to try to quantify these environmental benefits. And we reached out to both Stuart and Bill, and they were willing participants and the scientists who are going to work on quantifying these environmental benefits.
And listeners, we have time for some phone calls on this. And I wonder if anybody listening right now is trying to save a backyard tree. I've seen experiences with city dwellers who have trees in their backyard, maybe not so familiar with tree maintenance, but trying to save a beloved tree or noticing that backyards or front yards are disappearing in your neighborhoods, that's definitely an issue. The paving over of lawns. Anybody have a favorite tree in the city that you want to shout out to this morning? You can do that. 212-433-WNYC. That's our on-air number. We will never ask you for pledge money when you call us on the air. 212-433-9692 to talk to Evan Mason and Bill Solecki this morning. Bill, there was a tree census done in 2006, which is where I got that 5 million trees figure. Now, you're saying that the 2006 study didn't take into consideration private trees, backyard or front yard trees. So there are really a lot more trees in New York than we thought?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, to actually catalog the number of trees is obviously, you know, a tall order. There's certainly, you know, it's an ongoing estimate in terms of how many there are. I think it's pretty clear, though, in going back to Evan's point, that there is a tremendous amount of area that really hasn't been looked at in terms of questions of, you know, urban forestry and regreening, and that's the private space. And not only in Manhattan, but obviously as you get out into the boroughs, more and more of the as the lower densities, you have a slightly more space in the front yards and backyards, and you know it will tally up to you know a sizable proportion of our overall space for tree plantings.
Evan, this is such a big issue to me and to so many people right now. In a recent Gotham Gazette article, you were quoted saying there is disconnect on this issue of the value of trees with the city, and that they have launched this million tree program for public space, and yet they're allowing the destruction of so many trees through big development projects that are even publicly subsidized, and allowing zoning, I will add, I'm not sure if this was in your article, but allowing, you know, zoning all over the place that has people paving over their front yards for driveway space or for additions on their homes, And I wonder if you can talk about that disconnect and what you think the city should be doing.
Well, I think, first of all, it would be – I would encourage city officials, and we have support of some city officials, to partner with us and other community groups that are trying to enhance the environment, the privately owned spaces and publicly owned spaces. So I first want to partner. There are big and small developments that are occurring on a regular basis. You know, they're the well-known big developments that are in the papers every day, but many times there are small rear yard additions which are approved and which sort of encroach on these backyards, thereby eliminating or reducing light and air, and also putting in not permeable surfaces, you know, asphalt, concrete, instead of adding to the permeable surfaces, which aids our stormwater runoff system. So that's another key point that's right. Oftentimes missed.
Now, we have a couple of callers who are dealing with just this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to one or two. Eleanor in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. And that's exactly what just happened. They paved over a beautiful backyard with concrete. And when I spoke to the architect, he said they wanted a play area.
Who's they?
The owners of the house that renovated it. We're a row of brownstones, and we have lovely backyards. And that was a backyard that was gorgeous. And I think that architects don't look at the bigger picture. They just look at what the client wants. And they're not saying, well, that's bad for the, you know, environment, or that's bad for the neighborhood.
Right. And so there's, Eleanor, thank you. And there's a tension here, Evan, because obviously people have their personal property rights with their personal property. But then there is this bigger picture that Eleanor brings up.
Brian, can I just add one comment?
Yeah, Bill, go ahead.
One of the things that if you look back at, you know, New York history, I mean, there's been a lot of focus on, you know, things, bad things coming from property, you know, one property owner affecting another or neighborhood. And obviously things like zoning in the early 20th century were trying to promote the idea that there's a common good and that we need to sort of think about, you know, curbing these sort of negative externalities that go from one property to another. I think what Evan and I are sort of looking at is sort of a flip side, is that there are the idea of ecological services that might be promoted in better use of private property that will not only benefit individual homeowners, but will have neighborhood effects in terms of, you know, potentially reduced air pollution or mitigate urban heat island effects. So that I think is part of that tension, a switch from negative externalities in terms of bad things to sort of positive bleed over effects from one property to another.
Here's someone else with a similar story, I think. Gina in Williamsburg. Gina?
Hi. I'm so glad to hear this morning. You guys are really arming my arsenal, because I'm in this ongoing argument with a neighbor who they just don't like cleaning up after the tree and the leaves that it drops. And so they've talked to their landlord, who's talked to my landlord, and they want to chop the tree down just in the interest of ease rather than cleaning up after the falling leaves.
So what, Evan, can Gina do?
Well, first of all, I think that what we're asking for is a little bit of a cultural shift, which demands more vision and more ownership, taking responsibility for our urban environment. Yes, trees do have droppings. They do have seeds. This is a reality. But I would.
How can you argue with? They make oxygen. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I would just argue. Think back 10, 20 years ago when the idea of recycling plastic bottles was thought of as a bizarre concept. Who would ever do that? You had a show on a couple of weeks ago about freegans. Who would ever, you know, go look at garbage and save things in dumpsters? There is a cultural shift that I would urge, you know, all of us to just take a little bit more responsibility. And, you know, there's a lot of times a separation between the landlord and the tenant. Well, I would argue that both are a little bit responsible. Both could do a little bit more, and it does enhance our environment, our green environment, is a tool in the arsenal of against global warming. The other thing I want to go back to is the permeable pavement and what the caller before was talking about in terms of the architect putting in asphalt or concrete. I think there are resources online about permeable surfaces. There was an article in the paper the Times a couple of months ago about Chicago's paving of alleys. And I think we, both architects and planners and New York City public policy officials, really need to spread the word, do a lot of research about permeable pavements, because the maintenance is much lower, but it saves the stormwater runoff system. So it's another aspect I think we're just not showing enough vision and, you know, God. Yeah.
My guest on WNYC, Evan Mason, who was just speaking, Special Projects Coordinator of Landmark West, and Dr. Bill Selecki, Director of the Institute for Sustainable Cities and Professor of Geography at Hunter College, who are doing a study about backyard trees, as we talk about private trees in New York City, as the city has launched its Million Tree program to plant a million new trees on public space. But there's a lot of conflict, as we've been hearing from our callers, over private trees. So, Bill, is there a scientific argument to be made that preserving older trees is more beneficial to the environment, therefore to humans, than planting new ones?
Well, I mean, you raise a good question. I mean, the concept of, you know, the benefit of trees, you know, obviously there's a question of aesthetic and sort of general, you know, recreational value and so forth and so on. To be honest, in terms of the biology of a tree and its growth cycle, if you ask the question about the carbon sequestration, a younger tree is actually going to have a higher rate of that than an older tree. But the flip side, if you think about benefits to urban heat island, an older, more mature tree with a larger canopy will have much greater benefits than a younger tree, simply because of the extent of leaf coverage. And, you know, to some extent, the amount of transpiration or water moving through the tree. So it depends on which kind of question you're trying to look at. In general, tree plantings have some value for carbon sequestration, but in the city, really, their principal value would be for urban heat island mitigation and some of the air pollution reduction benefits. So in that case, you know, older trees, more mature trees are better.
Mitch in Manhattan wants to shout out to a favorite tree. Hi, Mitch. Mitch? Okay, Mitch, we're going to give you... All right, we'll come back to Mitch and see if he just walked away for a second. So if people want to plant a tree in their yard, Bill, are there specific types of trees that are better than others?
Well, there are you know, specific sort of lists that you can go either through, like, the American Forestry Association has a big sort of urban forestry program. I believe the City of New York, through the Parks Department, and has some of that information available as well. So again, it depends on the kind of amenity that you might want from mm-hmm. it. I mean, in general, you know, if you're talking about maintenance, you want a tree that, you know, isn't going to produce a lot of leaf litter, branch litter, you know, fruit and so forth. One that will be, you know, steady growing, not too rapid. Too rapid trees will tend to die and drop a lot of litter quickly. Slow trees, you know, you wouldn't see the kind of benefit that you want.
Evan, any that you would mention, or even any to avoid, maybe the notoriously stinky Japanese female ginkgo?
Well, I can say that there was a study done that looked at the highest economic benefits, and those are the London plane trees. I think it's pin oak. But those are not necessarily the size and scale that we would want in backyards, because they may be too big. So the answer to your question is we don't quite know, but that's part of the point of this study. Also, I have to point out, obviously, you want it to be a tree that's going to live in that particular environment, whether it's sunny or shady, and the right size and scale. But that's part of what the study is about, is to look at that.
Now we'll have Mitch in Manhattan. Shout out to his favorite tree, I think. Mitch, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
I just wanted to point out that there's an apple tree, the only apple tree that I know of on Fifth Avenue. It's at 11th on the northeast corner, and it's just extraordinary. I've seen that apple tree for the past 50-some-odd years, and it's still fruiting. And the only other apple tree that I know of in the city, but not in Manhattan, but it's in the back of Julius's restaurant in Brooklyn, and the best-tasting apple I've ever picked Unbelievable.
How about that, Mitch? Thank you very much. And who would have guessed, Evan, that there's an apple tree on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, right?
They're touchstones of our emotional health when you see these great trees.
It's something to tell your out-of-town relatives or say, oh, you live in New York, there's no nature there.
Right.
Jennifer in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Brian. Hi. I just wanted to point out, I'm in Hoboken. We have a bit of a problem with flooding. And with all these luxury condo developments, everybody's paved over their backyard. There's no trees to soak up any of the water anymore. And I'm the only natural backyard left, and I get everybody else's runoff.
Hmm. Wow. So, Bill, there's another great argument for having trees in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously do soak up. I think also what you're missing is what Evan had mentioned earlier, the pervious surfaces that, you know, that allow water to percolate down through rather than wash off. And, you know, I think, you know, more and more you see these backyards are sort of, as Brooklyn and in Hoboken, wherever, are being paved over and, you know, increasing the potential for flooding.
Anne in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Hello. I'm facing a great demolition of 50 to 100 trees, but this is in a group backyard. I'm talking about Park West Village and the huge demolition and then enormous building that's going on in this originally taxpayer-paid-for project.
Right. Now, I have to cut you off because of time, but I actually used to live in that development. That's from 97th Street to 100th Street in Manhattan, between Amsterdam.
It's in Landmark West's territory, so to speak.
And CPW,
yes.
Right? And yeah. So they're putting up two more. There were seven high-rises on that space, and now they're putting up, I think, two more high-rises. And they've cut down dozens and dozens of trees on that landscape property. Was there anything in the zoning that could have, you know, had the trees actually be a factor, or trees nothing under the law?
I don't know the direct answer to that. I'm sure some of your listeners do. But I will say that I don't believe the existing trees and permeable surfaces are in the calculation. I know developers are encouraged or asked to plant trees, but I it may at best be just replacing ones and then smaller ones that are less environmentally useful. To replace them. So I think it's just a calculation that's not out there, and that's part of the project, the point of doing this. In our short period of time, I want to say this project is to inspire people to think about the possibilities and make use of their teeny little places of as well as the big ones, and even front yards where they're putting the 100% of the front yards, if you will, street side for trash. You can go to www.landmarkwest.org to learn more about the project and about resources. We're also looking for funding for this project because scientists do not live by good vibes alone. And
That's singular Landmark West,
yes.
Right? Okay. And people can also participate in the survey that way, talk about the private trees on their property or in their neighborhoods.
Right. And tell us other neighborhoods that are characterized by these backyards. On the Upper West Side, there are 108 acres of backyards, which is 13% the size of Central Park. So there is a lot of acreage out there and throughout the city.
Right.
Bill, 10 seconds.
No, I just think that, again, there's the question of the common good, the common property of the cumulative effect of all these small parcels. And I think that's... There's a lot of interesting science questions that we're looking at, and then sort of that larger question of the common good.
All right. The Special Projects Coordinator of Landmark West is Evan Mason, and Dr. Bill Selecki is Director of the Institute for Sustainable Cities and Professor of Geography at Hunter College, both participating in the survey on private trees in New York City. Thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A lot more to come. Stay with us.